From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Tom Clark here with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, here's the number to call, 1-800-462-7413. Of course, along with your call, some topics to talk about. Tell us, Zorba.
Yes, we're going to talk about body weight and fried foods, how fried foods may interact. It's not just calories anymore.
Huh.
And then we're going to go revisit the pharmacy issue with selling cigarettes and what's online and essentially what's happening with attorneys generals and how we are going to look at pharmacies selling good health and bad health at the same time.
That's worth talking about a lot, I think. What's
Absolutely.
Our recipe?
Pesto spinach fusilli. You will like it. It is a wonderful pasta recipe.
That one coming up soon after some of your calls. So let's get to the phones now, Zorba. Welcoming our first caller, a listener in the Woodlands, Texas. Hi.
Hi. I'm calling about fish oil. What is the best oil to use for brain function and mental clarity? And I was in the health food store the other day, and someone told me that omega krill oil is preferable because of some ingredient. I'm not sure quite what it was, but I've been taking Erickson's fish oil and have been real pleased with that. So that's what I'm calling about.
You're going to get in an argument with Zorba.
Wait a second. Get in an argument. I don't like to argue.
Okay. Well, go ahead without arguing.
So I have a couple of questions, first of all, and then I'll tell you where this whole fish oil sort of thing came from. How often do you eat fish, any kind of fish?
Probably once a week, once or twice a week.
Okay, twice a week is – there's a big difference. What they discovered – this is about 15, 20 years ago when they looked at the Mediterranean diet, which, by the way, is the best diet that anyone could follow. They looked at people around the Mediterranean Sea, found out they had less heart disease, less stroke, less dementia, because half of all dementia is not Alzheimer's. It's from small vessel disease, cardiovascular health, if you will. So up they popped the idea, if you – eat fish a couple times a week, what we really ought to do is use fish oil. We're Americans. We ought to figure out what's in there that does it. And then it was DHA. We look at the amount of DHA in fish oil. It should be krill. It should be this and that. Now we go back now 15, 20 years, or go forward 15 or 20 years. We now have long-term studies. And the long-term studies on fish oil have shown it doesn't do anything. Now, that's
wow.
Very interesting. Wow is exactly it. Now, I'll tell you what. If you take fish oil, let's say you have high triglycerides, the cholesterol, we look at total cholesterol, LDL, the bad cholesterol, HDL, the good cholesterol, and triglycerides. If you take fish oil, you reduce the triglycerides. So the theory was, hey, if you reduce the triglycerides, you'll actually improve cardiovascular health. And there's one fish oil that is actually a prescription fish oil. It costs like $120 a month because they proved it reduces triglycerides. But the long-term 10-year studies have shown that even though it changes the triglycerides and improves the cholesterol, it doesn't make a difference in whether or not you have a heart attack or die from a heart attack. So I call this a cosmetic change to the numbers. And the issue here is we look at the numbers and we go, you're better off because of the numbers, but the numbers are actually markers. And if we change the numbers, we're not actually changing the death rate or the heart attack rate. So I used to take 1,000 milligrams of fish oil every day. I used to burp fish oil, and I used to tell people, put it in the freezer, you burp less, take it at night, no one will care if you burp. Then I did the research, and the research was very disappointing. Now, given that, the research still shows that fish counts, and it may be because it's not the fish oil. Maybe it's the protein and the oil in the fish. Maybe there's something else in salmon, besides fish oil. So I have to tell you, I've given it up. I used to take it, and then I stopped it about 3 years ago.
Okay. Well, that's very interesting. I'm not so interested in it as far as the triglycerides and all that. I'm more interested in something to just help with mental clarity.
Okay. So you're looking for brain function. Mom or dad, any issues of Alzheimer's or dementia in your family?
My mother actually died of a neurological disease called prion disease, or Creutzfeldt Jacob.
Well, that's very, as you know, that's very, very unusual. The risk that you'll have it is practically zilch. How did they figure that out? They found that out at autopsy?
No, it was we had just ruled out lots of different things, and it was just kind of a last-minute spinal tap that they did. To figure that one out.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah. Chances that you're going to have that are 1 in 1,000,000. I mean, they're not quite that low, but they're really close for that. If you're going to take fish oil for brain function, we have no studies on it, then you want to go to consumerlabs.org and pick the one that they recommend.
Thank you.
You're welcome, and good luck. And good luck.
Yeah,
to you.
Thanks so much. We appreciate the call. She's eating fish a couple of times a week.
That really counts.
800-462-7413. Callers waiting, an open line for you at 1-800-462-7413. And our next caller, Zorba, is a listener in Denison, Minnesota. Hi.
Good day, gentlemen.
How can we help?
I am having some ankle pain. About 3 months ago, my son talked me into going against him and some other buddies for a little pickup game of basketball.
Mm-hmm. How old is your son?
He is 16.
16. And how old are you?
57.
Just want to get the lay of the game. That's all. I got to figure out.
Okay.
You know, Tom is a hoops aficionado. He would have loved to have joined you.
Yeah. Can you dunk over him or no?
No dunking here. Maybe 30 years ago.
Okay, so you joined your son. I want to get the lay of the land. Yeah. He's 16. Yeah. You're 57. Joining him for a little game of hoops. Okay, please go on.
But I'm thinking I'm 30.
Yeah, right. That's right. You know what they say, 57 is the new 30.
Okay. So, anyway, a lot of jumping, a lot of pivoting, mm-hmm. a lot of quick stops and starts. And I had to actually wear a brace on my ankle. The next day when I woke up, I had, like, internal pain mm-hmm. inside the ankle, let's say, and mm-hmm. On the one foot. And the other foot was... not quite as bad, but I did wear a brace for about 3 weeks. I do energy management installation, so I'm on my feet, up
sure.
and down ladders mm-hmm. a lot, and mm-hmm. you know. And then the other piece is, I guess, healthcare. You know, mm-hmm. we no longer have healthcare provided by either my wife's employer or mine.
Okay, mm-hmm. so you no longer have insurance.
Yeah, well, we mm-hmm. carry mm-hmm.
catastrophic insurance.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and so I'm just wondering if.
Sure. What can you do? What can you do short of paying out-of-pocket expenses to go to the doctor?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So first of all, you walked on it. You can walk 4 steps. Obviously, you're doing your job, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Correct.
There's something which is called the Ottawa Ankle Rules. And basically, in the Ottawa Ankle Rules, and I don't have those in front of me, when somebody comes into the ER, I worked in the ER for 10 years. I'm a family doc. I see a lot of urgent care type things. If you apply the Ottawa Ankle Rules, it determines whether or not you need an x-ray. Now, if you're walking on it, this happened how long ago when you played? Month ago. Okay. You're walking on it. You're still doing it. The chances anything is going to show up on an x-ray are close to zero. In other words, there's no reason. If you went to a doc, they might do an x-ray. All of a sudden, you walk out with an x-ray bill, go to the doctor, and they send you to physical therapy. Okay? Couple of recommendations. I'm going to keep you from having to pay money to see a doctor. I will be your radio doctor for today. Okay. Number one.
Sure and see your own doctor.
That's right.
Not a medical
diagnosis.
That's
right. No, come on. It comes at the very end. At the very end, I will give the disclaimer. Don't pay attention to anything I say. But if you want my advice, okay, number one, anti-inflammatories. Are you taking any anti-inflammatories on a regular basis?
Not on a regular basis, no.
Two Aleve, twice a day, get the generic, okay? Two in the morning, two in the evening, do it for 3 to 4 weeks, okay? That's number one. That'll reduce the inflammation. Number two, if you need the ankle strap, wear the ankle strap. It can be useful, or an ACE bandage, to put a little pressure. Number three, ankle exercises, and we'll put those on our website, zorbapastor.org, or you enter it through Facebook. And ankle exercises that I will look at on YouTube that'll be good range of motion exercises for your ankle. And basically, that's what we do. Now, if we sent you to physical therapy, which would be a cost for you, out-of-pocket cost, they will give you hands-on ankle exercises. If you're an athlete and you've done athletic things, it's amazing what you can find on YouTube. And I will put some, I'll put a couple of them on the website. And generally, that's what we do. Now, if that fails to work, sometimes then we'll put people in a splint to put the ankle at rest. But this is a month out, and I think ankle exercises, regular anti-inflammatories, and you're going to be fine. The doc is, even with an x-ray, it would not make any difference with the initial conservative care. Okay?
Okay.
I have one final recommendation. Take the doctor bills and apply it to public radio, and then you'll be supporting public radio. No, I'm only fooling. I'm only fooling.
Is this a member drive?
No, it's not.
Actually, I am a public radio member and a public television member.
I love it. Thank you. Thank you so much.
I appreciate it, guys. Thank you.
You take care.
We appreciate the call. Thanks a lot. I'm impressed. I didn't know you did ER for 10 years.
Oh, yeah. You never knew I did ER for... Oh, yeah, in Chicago.
That is hard
yeah, I called
work.
It. Yeah, for 10 years. Well, I did it full-time for a couple of years, and then when I moved to Madison, yeah. I would go down there. This is what we did. Every 6 weeks, we had three kids in 30 months, and Penny was really close to her mom, Jerry.
Uh-huh.
So every 6 weeks, I would take off a day or two from the office. I would go down to Chicago. She would have the three little kids, and then Vanessa came like 5 years later, sitting in my mother-in-law's small little apartment.
Right.
And then I would go and work in the ER. Which did I want to be in? In the small apartment with these little kids and the tchotchkes all
You're
around.
You're saying ER was a welcome relief?
Oh, it was. It was a welcome relief, and it was exciting. It wasn't my little rural practice in Madison. It was an inner city ER.
Okay.
At the same time, it was very good, and I liked working in the ER. But I did that for 10 years.
Good for you. Well, before our next call, Zorba, fried foods and body weight. We all know that fried foods are not good for us, and that we can get fatter eating fried foods. What's new here?
Yeah. Well, first of all, let's talk a little bit about fried foods for a second.
Yeah.
Let's talk about fast food, which is mostly fried foods.
Yeah.
And fast food is food that you picked up. It may be in a fast food restaurant, or it may be in local convenience store that you're picking things off the hot rack, right? That's fast food.
Yeah.
Local convenience store in my small town. What percentage of the population eats fast food every day? So let's say today, what percentage of the population on average eats fast food?
Well, I'd say a huge percent. 30%. Yeah.
30% of the population every day eats fast food of some sort. 5% of the 5% of the population, 3 to 5%, visits a McDonald's every day. Huge number of people. Most of that food is fat. But the question was, is there a difference in calories? Now, for years, I've been saying a calorie is a calorie is a calorie. A rose is a rose is a rose.
Yeah.
And it turns out that there are different genetic predispositions. Now, there's no one fat gene. But it appears to be more and more genes that were discovering that lead to a genetic predisposition of fat. So what they did was they looked at 37,000 men and women in fat trial, rather in health trials.
Well, 37,000?
37, these were a compilation, a mega study of other trials of health.
Oh, okay.
So the nurse's health study, the physician's health study, and they ferreted out how people were gaining weight and not gaining weight. And they have blood tests that they've taken from people over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And they looked back at some of the genetic variables. They looked at about 60 different genetic variables, and they graded them from 1 to 4. In other words, 4 meant you had the highest genetic predisposition, 1 meant you had the lowest predisposition, based on genetic variables that we now think are partially responsible for obesity. Okay?
Okay.
In other words, there are a bunch of obesity genes.
Yeah.
And what they discovered was that if you had a lot of the obesity genes and you ate a lot of fat fried foods, you were much more likely to gain weight than somebody who had very few obesity genes and ate a lot of fried foods.
Oh.
They were less likely to gain weight.
That kind of explains.
You follow me?
That explains how I can eat so much junk food and stay skinny.
That's right. That's exactly it. Because you have fewer genes in you that predispose you. So you may be beginning, let's say you're getting 1,000 calories of fat calories a day.
Yeah.
You're not going to gain weight because you don't have the genetic predisposition.
That means junk food is good for me.
No. You're looking at the wrong way of looking at the study. That means that you can. No, no. We're looking at people who gain weight, not like people.
I do get it.
But you follow what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's very interesting.
So it appears a calorie is not a calorie is not a calorie. That and this
some people are more affected than others. But
to fried foods, yeah, not just to calories. So in other words, if you've got 500 calories of French fries, you may be more likely to put on weight than you have, we'll say, 500 calories of a pasta dish that is low fat or a vegan dish or vegetarian dish. And this if it turns out to be true, you need more studies, but this is a very good study. It means that we are not counseling people the right way. In other words, we have to go towards a diet that also affects fat. Remember, the Atkins diet is a high-fat diet.
It is.
Right. So for some people, they're not going to lose weight. For other people who don't have the genetic predisposition, they might lose weight. It's very exciting data.
800-462-7413, our toll-free number. And a Spokane, Washington listener joins us now. Hi.
Hi, Zorba. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What's up?
Well, I'm calling because I have a recurring, persistent rash on my upper eyelids, and it absolutely drives me crazy. And I've been to my doctors, my eye doctor and my skin doctor and my regular doctor, and I've tried a variety of steroidal ointments that they've given me, and they work great to knock down the rash, but as soon as I stop taking the ointment, the irritation starts to recur. And I know that I can't take those steroids for very long, or I should say I shouldn't put them on my eyelids very long because they can lead to glaucoma and cataracts. And so I've tried other things, not wearing eye makeup. I've trimmed my hair back so it doesn't tickle my eyelids and irritate them. I tried milk and honey in combination. Someone told me that would help. But nothing seems to work. So I'm wondering if you know of any naturopathic kinds of treatments.
But rash on your eyelids.
Yes.
You've done a lot. How long have you had this?
You know, it's recurred off and on for several years, and but recently it's been really bad. It's happened six times, and so I'll use the steroid for about a week, week and a half, and then be off it for an equivalent amount of time. And then it starts up again.
Wow. A couple of things. Let's talk about the ointment. So you use a steroid ointment, low potency?
The one I've been using is called Desonide, and it's 0.05. Dermatologist tells me that that's the mildest one.
Okay. Have you tried Coal Tar for psoriasis? Coal Tar shampoo?
No.
Okay. One suggestion, a coal tar, and I don't mean you go out and go out and then take some coal and make some tar. I don't mean like tar and I don't mean tar and feather type tar that they that they use on highways or something.
Sometimes it's still so awful I would be willing to try.
Yeah.
Even that.
There I
but
for psoriasis, coal tar, and there are coal tar shampoos, are an old remedy that we still often use in psoriasis to reduce inflammation that is safe to use on a chronic basis.
Okay.
So one of the things I would try is go to your local pharmacy and ask for a shampoo that contains tar, coal tar. And it actually is derived from coal tar. And what I would do is I would take that and I would use that as an ointment, and I would put that on my eyes before I went to sleep. I might try it once a day or twice a day. Just that, I would leave it on there and see if that works. In other words, it'll come in a bottle because it'll be in a shampoo. And the other way to do it is actually to talk to your dermatologist, and the pharmacist can actually compound a coal tar lotion for you. And they might be able to compound actually a coal tar cream and ointment. But I would initially try the shampoo, because that's a down and dirty, easy way to take care of it. And that might be exactly what works. It's an old remedy. You've clearly tried everything. You're looking for a naturopathic remedy, and what you need is an anti-inflammatory that you can use chronically that isn't going to disturb your eyelid. And you're right, because if you use steroids long enough, that can actually cause atrophy of the eye. But coal tar is very, very safe. That's what I would try. Good luck. Let us know what happens.
Thank you, Zorba. Thank you, Tom.
Sure.
Bye.
Bye.
Did anybody ever really tar and feather people?
Oh, yes, they did. In Washington's time, that's what they did. I just finished a book called Washington, the President, and they did that. In the Whiskey Rebellion, They used to take people out, they would put hot tar on them and put feathers on them, and it would stick to their skin, and they could die from it. Yeah, they did it. They actually did that.
Font of knowledge.
Font.
Yeah.
It's very good.
What was the purpose of the feathers?
Wouldn't
the tar be enough of a punishment?
The tar would be enough.
They just wanted you to look silly in addition.
I don't know what the feathers were. You know what? It's a good question.
Well, before we take a quick break, Zorba, let's take an email question from a listener, Diane in Sandpoint, Idaho. She asks, "Dear Zorba, several months ago, our dog clipped my right knee and caused excruciating pain. I'm a small acreage farmer, and at the time I did not have health insurance, so I endured using ice packs, a knee brace, and a cane for most of the farming season. Things improved, and I'm walking without a cane and rarely have pain, but I'm concerned about the next steps as I return to another farming season. Now, for the first time in almost 20 years, I have health insurance and thought I should have it checked out. I don't have a regular physician, but am now searching for one. Do you have advice as to what type of medical practice I should go to as a starting point? I listen to your show often and always learn something new."
Well, thank you. Thank you very much for listening to the show. I'd go to a family doc. I mean, that's what I do. Family doc is really, if you will, the maestro of the orchestra of what you need. They can answer most of your questions. And that's, you know, I'm a family doc, so I think we really do a good job at exactly the things that you need. Now, the question is, how do you choose a family doc? How do you choose any doctor in an area? And I recommend that you ask friends who you trust who might have a little medical knowledge. Where do you go? That's one good thing. And the other thing is, if you don't know anyone around in town, I recommend that you kind of look around who might be associated with the university. New doctors in town often are looking for their practice to build, and they'll have the time to spend with you. A doc who's been there for 20 or 30 years might have a practice that's busier. You want to have a doctor who can take enough time, look at you as a person, and give you the care.
It isn't easy, actually.
No, but it's not easy. It's not easy. And I forget about that.
It's almost like getting married.
Oh, it's very, it's really,
You have to trust the other person.
Right. It is not easy. And I have patients who go to other parts of Wisconsin or around the country, and they go, "How do I find someone like you?" I mean, it's not that I'm the be all and end all, but we've had a relationship.
Yeah.
And you know what? I don't have a good answer for them. But I ultimately say, if you know somebody, that's where you start. And also, if you go to a doc and you don't like them, right away, switch.
Yeah.
Go somewhere else.
Yeah. Do you have a question or need some healthy living advice? Post it to our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org. And remember, we are all over Facebook.
Our recipe is coming up next. More of your calls, some more emails to talk about our medical myth buster too. All right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. I'm Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Our toll-free number, 800-462-7413. But before our next call, recipe time, pesto spinach fusilli. What kind of spinach fusilli?
Fusilli.
What is fusilli?
It's this sort of corkscrew type of pasta, you know, kind of.
It's
kind of got the.
I thought because of the name, it kind of looks silly, right?
Yeah.
That's why I said fusilli.
Fusilli. That sounds fusilli. You know, fusilli. Probably like that. You know how you know it's fusilli? Says it on the package.
Got it. Okay. So pesto spinach.
And you could use anything. You know, you could use any pasta.
Old, yeah.
Yeah, any old pasta you have around
Got
the house.
Got it. Okay.
Know.
So let's
But
go.
Anyway, this is pesto. So it's a pesto type sauce. Start out with 1 pound of fusilli pasta.
1 pound fusilli pasta.
8 ounces of baby spinach.
8 ounces baby spinach.
That's right. Three quarters of a cup of pine nuts.
3 quarters of a cup of pine nuts.
Now, I want to talk about pine nuts. I would recommend you spend more money and get better pine nuts. And the reason is there was a pine nut problem, which was a couple of years ago, which pine nuts that came out of China that actually caused people to lose their sense of smell and change their sense of smell.
Oh, wait, really?
And they weren't exactly sure what it was, whether it was a contaminant or something else. And I don't quite remember precisely what it was. But since that time, I have started to go to pine nuts that are harvested in America or in Europe.
And you can tell them when they...
Well, they'll often say that. I look for on the container. I look for it and say, you know, in America or Europe, and you pay more money. Mm-hmm. Okay. By the way, if you don't want to spend the money on pine nuts, you could actually use almonds, and they will turn out... This will turn out to be a similar pesto recipe.
Okay.
Two medium garlic cloves peeled and smashed.
Mm-hmm. Two medium garlic cloves peeled and smashed.
Third of a cup of grated Parmesan cheese.
Third of a cup grated Parmesan cheese.
A teaspoon of lemon zest.
Little tea lemon zest.
A tablespoonful of freshly squeezed lemon juice.
Big tea freshly squeezed lemon juice.
A teaspoon of kosher salt.
Little tea kosher salt.
Quarter teaspoon of freshly ground black pepper.
Quarter little tea freshly ground black pepper.
Half a cup of extra virgin olive oil.
Half a cup of extra virgin olive oil.
Now,
I would use more pepper, by the way.
Yeah, okay. So,
I really could
use more pepper.
Yeah.
Okay, you're making the pesto. So place half the spinach, all of the pine nuts and garlic in a food processor with the blade, pulse scraping down, you know, so you're basically sort of smashing it down as much as you can. Mm-hmm. Then you add the remaining spinach, pulse until it's finely chopped again. And after everything is in a nice, sort of smooth pulse, add the Parmesan, lemon zest, the juice, the salt, the pepper, and combine it about 30 seconds. So basically, you're making it into a pesto sauce. Then with the motor running, everything is all done, you slowly put in the olive oil. That's the last thing you put in until you basically have a smooth paste. So the olive oil is really number two. Very important. Then in the pasta, put the pasta in, follow the instructions on the package, put a little bit of salt, a little bit of oil in there, and basically when you drain the pasta, save a little bit of the cooking water in there because you may need it. Okay, so what you do is you place the pot over low heat. Put the pasta in this pot under low heat, add the pesto, add a little bit of the reserved liquid, about a quarter of a cup, and stir it to combine. And you have to add that liquid because otherwise the paste is simply too thick on the pasta. You stir it continuously until it's coated and warmed up. Remember, this is low heat. You're sort of keeping it warm because you've got an oily mixture and want the oil to warm up. Add more salt and pepper as you want to have. Put it on the table. Put a little Parmesan on top of it. You've got a wonderful
dish. Sounds delicious.
It really is. Yeah. It really is delicious. And if you do like I do, we use a certain amount of garlic in this, two medium cloves. I often will add more and more garlic because my wife, Penny, says there is no such thing as too much garlic.
Yeah, we both like garlic.
If you want a copy of today's recipe.
I can go to the web.
Oh, exactly. We no longer mail it out. ZorbaPastor.org. You can see pictures of Tom Cavorting. You can see
cavorting. I don't cavort as often as I'd like to.
No. That's ZorbaPastor.org, or you can find us through Facebook.
1-800-462-7413. 800-462-7413. On to the phones now. A Grant County, Wisconsin listener joins us. Hi.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. How can we help?
I have had an ear problem for quite some time. It's my right ear, and it's a terrible throbbing sensation. I have had it checked out by a regular physician, and I've also had it checked out by an ear doctor, and both said that it's in the inner ear, and there's nothing I can do about it. But I've had it for quite some time. Mm-hmm.
It's not ringing. It's not tinnitus, which is, or tinnitus, however it's pronounced.
No, it's just a throbbing. Mm-hmm.
You have not had a CAT scan or MRI scan.
No.
How long has it gone on for?
Probably more than 6 months.
So you've got a throbbing problem. It's painful, or hear it? There's no pain.
It's not painful. Mm-hmm.
It's a throbbing sound, but it's not painful. It is a sound that's actually there. Well, this is always something of concern if it doesn't go away. So the real question is, do you need imaging studies for something like this? Do you need an MR scan of a CAT scan or MR scan? I always consult the radiologist before that to see if there is something going on in the inner ear, and that's what I would recommend. I would recommend you get scanned and imaged because it's gone on for 6 months. You cannot see into the inner ear through the scope. All you see when they look in the back of the nose is they look at the eustachian tube, which is the tube between your nose and your ears, so they see that. When they look at the ear, they see the eardrum, and they can look at the middle ear, which is the eardrum. They can look at the three bones in the middle ear, and they can see if there's fluid in there. But they actually can't see the inner ear at all. The only way you can see the inner ear is through imaging. It's in the bone. CT or MR scan. And so if you came to see me and I would do just what your doc did. I would say, well, it's there. It'll probably go away. We're not exactly sure what it is because most of these things go away. If it's tinnitus or tinnitus, that's one thing. That's from a damage to the inner ear. And that's a sound that goes in. It's not usually a throbbing. But if you've got a throbbing, the question is, what's going on there? Is this something that's growing, such as a tumor that may be growing, whether or not there's something called a cholesteatoma, which is a type of thing that you can see in the middle ear, but you can often see that through a scope. But I think you should get an imaging study. So what I think you ought to do is call up your doc or call up the ENT doc and say, I want an imaging study. This is still going on. I need to have a scan. You don't have an answer for me. They don't have a diagnosis. There's no diagnosis that you have yet. What they basically said was, without using these words, let's give it some time and see if it goes away. And most of these do, but it hasn't happened in your case. You need to have a more definitive workup.
Okay.
And you need to be kind of insistent on it. If they say, we don't need a scan, then you need to go to another doctor. And let us know what happens, would you?
Good. Can I say something to Tom?
Oh, sure.
Of course.
I just want to tell Tom to keep... Please keep his raincoat near his hot tub so his neighbors don't have to worry anymore about him.
Noted. Thanks for the call.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
People are listening, Tom. People are listening.
I have to make sure I keep my house key on me, whatever I'm wearing or
that's
not
right,
wearing.
That's right, wherever you are. That's exactly.
800-462-7413 is our toll-free number, 1-800-462-7413. And Zorba, we welcome a listener now in Billings, Montana. Hi.
Hi.
What's up?
I am anemic again. I've been anemic off and on my whole life. And my doctor said not to worry about it just because it's been a cycle my whole life. And I just wondered if there was something I could do about that. And I should point out I'm vegetarian, but I do eat fish two or three times a week.
Okay, so you're anemic. Now, why are you worried about the anemia? Just because you think it's bad, right?
Because I'm tired and I'm very pale and my hands are cold. It's symptomatic.
Well, it may be symptomatic, but, you know, the anemia and the concept of fatigue with anemia started with commercials in old-time 50s television when they had Geritol, feel stronger fast. And that was sort of the slogan on TV with, I don't remember, the $64,000 question and other things. And basically, it was a tonic of iron and alcohol. And that was Geritol. You'd have your nip at night with a little bit of iron in it, and you would feel stronger fast. But when you look at blood counts, they follow a bell-shaped curve. So some have a higher count, some have a lower count. Men, for instance, have a higher count. Women have different normals. They can have a lower count, and that's not uncommon. Vegetarians have lower blood counts often than carnivores. That's part of it. And people who have a lower blood count tend to have fewer heart attacks and strokes. And there's a question as to whether or not that's a marker or whether or not, it's really good. So For the anemia, they've done a workup on the anemia, iron levels, and B12 and folate. Have they looked at that?
You know, we didn't really talk about it at my last doctor's visit. He just pointed out that, yet again, I was anemic.
Uh-huh. But your doctor's never looked at the anemia. How long have you been anemic for?
Off and on for 50 years.
For 50 years. Okay, for quite a long time. So in other words, this may be your normal, by the way. This may be the normal of you. If it's a new anemia, we worry about bleeding. We look at the colon to make sure you don't have a colon that's bleeding and a tumor. The first thing we do if there's an iron deficiency anemia in people is check their colon out. That's a new anemia. But this may be your normal. Some people have a lower normal. I don't think the fatigue and the cold hands that you complain about are really due to your count, especially since your count has been normal. I think there are other issues. Now, the paleness that people may see may be due to that, you know, and that's something we really can't concern. What is your, do you know what your numbers are at all?
Yeah, I should. He handed me a slip. I didn't pay enough attention.
Uh-huh. But if it's been this way for years, it's not something I would be of concern. Now, the workup for an anemia is we do an iron, we check iron levels, and we do that through a couple of different tests. We often test B12, and we test folic acid, also called folate. And those are the things that we look at for anemia. If you've never been tested, you may want to get tested once to see whether or not you're deficient in one of these nutritional things.
Okay, super. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yep. Appreciate the call. Thank you very much.
Feel stronger fast. Do you remember the guy who would say it at all?
I don't.
Neither do I. But I remember he would stand up. It was Geritol. Do you remember what else they would advertise?
No.
Serutans.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Which was nature spelled backward. Do you remember what it was for?
No.
Constipation.
Oh.
See, you were young. You never thought about constipation. But it was geared towards older folks.
Yeah.
Older folks. So constipation is the bane of the elderly.
Mm. Before we take a quick break, Zorba, let's take a question from our Facebook page. This one comes to us from Carol in Huntsville, Alabama. She asks, Dr. Pastor, I just read an article on your treatment of tuberculosis in Tibet with the use of Young's Living Essential Oils. Could you tell me what combinations you used? I'm new to essential oils, and I'm trying to get more information on the uses of certain oils.
I don't think that I wrote anything about essential oils and the treatment of tuberculosis with essential oils. There was nothing that I know of. Well, there's nothing that I actually wrote about that because TB, and that's what she was talking about, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, TB in Tibetans.
Yeah.
TB is treated with drugs. It's not treated with essential oils.
Somebody else? Well,
I'll have to look and see. But let's talk about essential oils,
sure,
which are the real issue.
Sure.
Essential oils are sort of the newest thing in the health food. Well, newest meaning the last 3 to 5 years, mm-hmm, that are used. And it's felt that certain oils are more essential than others, and mm-hmm, they usually are combinations. They're naturopathic remedies. For some people, they feel like when they use essential oils, they feel like they're stronger, they have more energy, they have more vitality, and they look better. I am not an authority in essential oils at all, but usually I defer to my naturopathic colleagues, mm-hmm, on finding the right combination. When it comes to something like tuberculosis, Western medicine is really what works, and I don't think I would go to essential oils. And I'll give you an example of this in Tibetans. The Mensikang, which is the Tibetan Medical Institute, when they have someone with tuberculosis in Dharamsala, and I've been there, they may treat them with Tibetan medicine, but only when it's in combination with Western medicine. And that's the way I follow that situation.
Do you have a question for the good doctor? Post it to our Facebook page or send it to us in an email at
Zorba@WPR.org.
Some interesting research to talk about. Some more of your calls, of course, our Medical Mythbuster 2, right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That toll-free number again is 800-462-7413. But, Zorba, before our next call, new developments in that issue of pharmacies with cigarettes.
That's right. Well, as you know, cigarettes are sold all over, and they're sold in pharmacies.
Yeah.
And CVS pharmacy chain said, we are not going to carry cigarettes anymore.
Yeah, we talked about that.
We talked about that.
Yeah.
Big issue. Why are they doing it? That's a billion. That's a lot of money. I don't know what the amount is. You know, half a billion, quarter of a billion. It's a lot of money that they're going to lose, a lot of profit that they're going to lose. And they made a decision that this is not keeping with the corporate policy of who we are.
Yeah, probably hoping to gain some customers.
Well, of course. You know, I mean, they're in the business of business, right? So they're, you know, they're it's touchy-feely in one way, but they want. Well,
so what's new here?
Two dozen attorneys general, have now sent letters to five of the country's largest retailers. You know, things like Rite Aid, Walgreens, Kroger Pharmacy, Safeway, and Walmart. And they are responsible for most prescriptions in the country. And they've said, look at what CVS is doing. We're encouraging you to do it, too. We think that you should do that, too. Now, they don't have any pressure to do that, but they can send letters, and there can be public pressure to get rid of cigarettes in pharmacies.
Yeah. Well, if they don't have any authority there, then what good is it?
Well, they're saying, we think this is a good idea. We think that if you are
I can send them a letter, too, and say, hey, why don't you do this?
Well, they got together. Attorney generals looked at cigarettes, looked at sales, and they started to put some pressure on, the pressure being public pressure. And look at what we're doing. We're discussing it on the air.
Yeah.
It made news in the newspaper. In other words, they got together and said, smoking is bad. We're attorneys general. We think smoking is bad. Why don't you stop selling those products.
I see. I kind of understand it. It is the government
leaning
on business, saying, we can't actually make you do this, but we are the government.
We are the government. So we're big boys. You remember when you were kids, there were cigarette machines all over in restaurants.
Sure.
Well, you could buy cigarettes when you were 16. Yeah. All you had to do was, you know, was put the quarters in the machine and pull the cigarettes out.
You could probably make the case this is none of government's business, and they ought to get out of it and let business do what business wants to do.
Yeah. Oh, and I think, and I agree with that. On the other hand, society and issues with smoking have gone hand in hand. Mm-hmm. You know, you could say that, well, why should we have why does every restaurant in Wisconsin, why is it non-smoking? It's the restaurant's business. It's not the government's business, right?
Yeah.
Over time, society made changes. Who would have thunk that taverns in the state of Wisconsin and Minnesota would be smoke-free? If somebody gave me 10-1 odds, I would have taken the bet years ago. This is another issue of trying to get tobacco out of our society. I applaud the attorneys generals for doing this. Put pressure on the pharmacies to get cigarettes out of their sales.
1-800-462-7413, our toll-free number. And, Zorba, our next caller is a listener in San Miguel de Allende, Mexico. Hi.
Hey there. You pronounced it pretty well there, Tom.
Yeah, I didn't say Mexico, though. I should have, right?
Well, you got close.
Oh, okay. So you hear us on the web?
That's right. How did you figure that one out?
He's bright.
Yeah.
He's bright.
I got a light bulb
on top
of my head.
He's bright.
So how can we help?
I just have a question to Zorba about what he knows about the use of frequencies in treatment of diseases, resonant frequencies in particular. Everything that exists has a resonant frequency, be it a living organism, and your buildings. Everything has a resonant frequency.
Mm-hmm.
The technology has been around for over 125 years,
Well, I'll give you one example of where it's used. It's used to destroy kidney stones within the body because the stone has a resonant frequency, and then there is a machine. Basically, we put people in a machine, put sound waves in so that the stones actually shatter, and you can keep people from having to need surgery because using the resonant frequency of the stone. to move around. Let me give you another just example of this. There is now a magnetic frequency that is used to treat severe depression that's refractory to antidepressants. And it's a non-invasive frequency. It's these are magnets that are actually used. It's FDA approved, approved that actually appears to help people with depression, with severe depression. Well, one recommendation that I have is that if you have something that's non-invasive, that doesn't hurt, that you don't have to swallow, because we don't have to worry about toxins, and it gets rid of pain and gets rid of inflammation, then keep on doing it. Thanks so much for your call.
Appreciate the call at 1-800-462-7413. Zorba, now Mythbuster time.
Yes.
Today's medical myth comes to us from Drew, listening in Cincinnati, Ohio. He writes, "Dear Tom and Zorba, you often hear that after you've recovered from being sick, you're supposed to toss out and replace your old toothbrush. I guess the thinking here is that germs and bacteria can happily live in those bristles, so is that true?"
No, it is not. Do you ever toss out your toothbrush?
No, I'm glad it isn't, because I've never tossed a toothbrush.
I've never done it either. I think if you're concerned about your toothbrush having germs in it, all you do is wash the toothbrush in soap and water and get rid of the germs. And if you want to be
I never have done that.
I'm just saying, for a germaphobe. Yeah. You wash it with soap and water, and then if you're really a germaphobe, just take that toothbrush and put it in alcohol and whip it around in alcohol for probably about 30 seconds, and then wash the alcohol off, and you'll be tip-top. I've got an electric toothbrush. It would cost me money to actually toss the toothbrush after I was sick.
Well, just the, you don't toss the whole.
No, it's electric. You don't have an electric. Do you have an electric toothbrush?
Yeah, but you just can replace
it. No, they're like $10 because it's connected to the bottom.
Yeah, my wife uses one. I don't.
Yeah, and no, it's connected to the bottom.
My big trouble with the toothbrush is I don't change them often enough. I'm brushing my teeth.
Right, that's the difference.
That's important.
When was the last time you changed your toothbrush?
I don't know. A while ago. Have a myth you want.
We need a picture of Tom's old toothbrush because he's got to change it. You're not getting into your teeth, Tom.
You are getting a picture of my toothbrush. Have a myth you want Zorba to sink his teeth into. Just send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org. Maybe we could take pictures of your toothbrush and my toothbrush. It's not
going to
happen.
800-462-7413. El Paso, Texas joins in now. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
I'm from El Paso, Texas, and it's north of San Miguel de Allende, and we are the safest city in the country, despite the fact that the city across the river is the unsafest city in Mexico.
Yeah, very interesting. Anyway. Very interesting. Thank you. Thank you.
I'm a faithful listener to Dr. Pastor. Zorba Pastor, because Zorba always reminds me of my favorite movie, Zorba the Greek.
Oh, sure. Of course.
Wonderful. And, well, I am originally from Switzerland, and there was a question about how to cook oats. And oats were, in my days, that's a long time ago, were our favorite and practically only cereal we ate. And I have a winter recipe and a summer recipe. And the winter recipe consists of about a third cup of oats in the cereal bowl, microwavable cereal bowl, with about 2 tablespoons of ground flaxseed.
Oh, good, good.
And salt
good.
To taste. Mm-hmm. I add fruit to taste, dried fruit like craisins, raisins, cut up apricots or whatever.
Excellent, excellent.
And cover the whole thing with fat-free milk. Put it in the microwave for 2 minutes, remove it, of course, carefully, add fat-free yogurt, ground almonds, and a teaspoon honey, and sprinkle it with cinnamon, mix it up, and enjoy.
Exactly.
And it's a wonderful breakfast.
It sounds wonderful, and breakfast is such an important meal.
Oh, yes, and it has everything.
And in our society, where we rush, we don't do it. And you think of it, you've got the calcium of dairy products. You've got flaxseed in there with oats that will give you fiber. You've got a serving of fruit or 2 servings of fruit. You've got the lactobacillus of yogurt. You've got a dynamite, wonderful breakfast to have. Dynamite, wonderful breakfast. So.
And the summer version is even better. It is normally do the same mixture with raw oats.
Uh-huh, okay.
And then my adaptation is, it's the adaptation of a famous Swiss breakfast, which is muesli, Swiss muesli.
Right, I've had it.
It's now available, but mine is much healthier because it has less junk in it.
I like muesli.
The original was invented by a Swiss doctor by the name of Fischer. And it probably in the 30s or 40s, and it consists of raw oats, milk, and in my case, fat-free, honey, yogurt, all to taste, cracked or ground nuts of any kind, and lots of cut-up fruit, be it apples, pears, bananas, prunes, pineapple, mango, peaches, grapes, strawberries, blueberries, any kind. Mix it all up, add yogurt to taste, mix it all up.
It's great.
And when my American husband was first served this mixture of muesli, he looked at it and said, this looks awful. A bite, he took a spoonful and surprised said, it's awful good. ever since we call it awful, awful, all my friends say, are you making awful, awful again?
That's funny.
So this is my Swiss version of a healthy breakfast called awful, awful.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for sharing that.
Yeah,
it's
we
wonderful.
Appreciate
I'll
that. Can we put
it.
All that on
That's
the
right.
web?
Yeah, I think we can. We're going to put that all of that. We're going to put your
it's
recipe. You're going to transcribe it. Put it on your website. The summer and winter awful, awful, which sounds awfully good.
Thank you so much for sharing that call. Before we head out today, Zorba, here's an email from loyal listeners Kathy and David of Ashland, Wisconsin, who pose a curious question. Dear Tom and Zorba, we love the theme music on your show. It's so soothing. So here's my question. Explain your theme music and who does it for your show. There has to be a health connection, I am sure.
Well, it's Leo and Ben Sidran.
Which we say at the end of the program.
That's right. And the health connection, well, the connection is the fact that they happen to be really, really good friends.
Friends of yours.
That's right.
Yeah.
They're really good friends. Ben Sidran is a world-class famous jazz musician. And years ago I said, we need to have a theme.
And
theme
we don't have any money to hire anybody.
We don't have any money. That's right. So he said, okay, well, you can hire Leo, my son, for nothing. So Leo wrote it with Ben, and we've had it ever since. And Leo will go all around the world, and periodically somebody from America will say, you know what? Aren't you Leo Sidran who wrote that music on Zorba Pastor? Whenever that happens, he gives me a call. Yeah. It's quite fun.
Ben worked with Steve Miller.
Oh,
in the band.
Ben worked with Steve Miller and still is he does incredible stuff. Yeah. Incredible stuff. So
do you have a question about the show? Post it to our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org or Facebook.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org.
Don't forget, you can call us anytime, too, at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen, and our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping you'll be with us for the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0405Z. More information on Zorba, his clinic and healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, and show archives, is available online at ZorbaPastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.